I'm Jean Marie Laskus. I'm a journalist. I spent my career helping Americans understand the lives of other Americans. Coal miners, gun shop clerks, staffers in the White House mailroom. In my new podcast, Cement City, I tell the story of an entire town. A dying town that you have absolutely no reason to care about. But trust me, you will. Listen to and follow Cement City, an Odyssey original podcast in partnership with Cement City Productions. Available now for free on the Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
97.1 FM Talk Podcast. This hour of the Mark Reardon Show is sponsored by Gamma Tree Experts. Your trees deserve the best care. Call Gamma Tree Experts. The Mark Reardon Show.
Loser, loser, loser.
Witch hunt, scam, hoax.
You're going to literally see the craters on the moon with your own eyes.
My name is Joe Biden. Can't sing, can't dance, can't do much of anything.
This is the Mark Reardon Show.
Well, good afternoon on what is a beautiful day again in St. Louis. This is, I meant to tell Dave Murray this because I know he has a similar phrase, but I always call these 10% days because it's like some of the nicest days of the year, and I feel like only 10% of the days are like this. This may be like a 5% day today, Sue.
Oh, it's really
gorgeous,
good.
Right?
Yes.
It really is. I was out watering the grass. You know, I'm trying to grow a little more grass in the bare spots and babying that grass seed, keeping it moist, Sue. This is what I do. I bring things to life. I've told you.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. It's your gift.
It is. So
you're killing me.
I was last night. I couldn't get away from some of this stuff with the hurricane. And Fred, you were watching the Fox coverage. You said, right?
I was. Yeah. Most all night.
I was tooling around online, and I go to the Washington Post website, and they had a page that was a live stream from like four different locations.
Oh, that's fun.
Yeah. And one of the screens actually had four locations just on that screen. So if I did the math, it's probably like eight or nine different places that they were doing the live screens on. Now, some of them you couldn't even see because there was so much rain and wind that the cameras were kind of blocked out. But they were showing, you know, I've been down many times to Sanibel Captiva. My friend Tim McGowan, who's down there on Captiva, he's, you know, he got whacked with Ian a couple years ago. He had flooding a couple of weeks ago in one of his homes. He's got three homes, and one that the family stays in, and two that he rents. And I've stayed in the home. They call it like Beta Beach, Sue, down there. So, you know, that island is very narrow. It's not very wide. So on the bay side is what happens is all the water kind of gets, you know, into there and then gets sucked out. And when it gets sucked out again, it's got nowhere to go, and it goes over, you know, some of the island. I don't even know, you know, really
Yikes.
Describing that well. But he had water again last night. So this is an area that got Ian hammered. I mean, I was down there last summer. It got hammered. And from what I'm seeing right now, you're going to go to these places that you have vacationed, you know, Siesta Key or whatever, and you will be stunned by what you see. One of the things that happens is the when the saltwater, you know, crosses over onto the flora and the fauna, it's not good for the
the salt water. No.
So that becomes I know that's not the most important thing right now because we got people that may have lost their lives and a lot of damage. I'm just saying that these things, they take forever to recover from. And we're now, even this afternoon, I'm seeing more and more video that looks devastating. It takes a while for it to emerge.
I was cautiously watching last night because I have friends, Elaine and Mark Stone, who live in Lakeland, in a retirement community on a golf course. And they moved there because it was more inland a little bit. They thought they'd be safe from everything. But they're not that far from Tampa. And they spent the night in one of their closets with their mattresses around them.
Oh, my
gosh. And when they got up this morning, they found a lot of gutters were gone. Their lamppost was gone. Bushes were destroyed, that sort of thing.
Wow. You know what I'm seeing is when they're showing the tornadoes, that's what's freaking me out.
Oh,
so
my
these
gosh.
Poor people living through tornadoes in advance. And some of this where, you know, tornado damage, they rip the roof off places, there's stuff scattered, and then it rains on you. It's outrageous.
Right. And we have Steve Jervey, who is your friend, yes. Sue. You used to work here in St. Louis, retired meteorologist from Tampa, and he was on with us a couple of days ago, and he'll explain some of that because I'm hearing terms that I've never heard before, like wedge tornadoes.
Oh,
and
my gosh.
They were just brutal when you see some of the images. Now, on Tropicana Field, Fred, was that just the hurricane damage or was that from a tornado? Do you know?
I don't know which that was.
But, Sue, you've seen the Tampa Bay Rays.
So it might have been the tornadoes.
Yeah, you've seen the video or you've seen pictures of what happened to the Rays Stadium?
No, I haven't.
Well,
I haven't seen it yet.
The roof essentially got torn off. I mean, not completely, but it was pretty much shredded, wasn't it, Fred?
Yeah, it was. It was like parts of it were just pulled completely
off.
Here's
a little description.
We were here earlier this afternoon, and there were no emergency vehicles in the parking lot where they had been staging before, which indicates to me that the resources who were staging here have left. Now that roof is ripped into shreds.
Tropicana Field. Who would have ever thought that would happen? It was built because of the changeable weather in Florida. It was built as a dome because they wanted to make sure that we could play games and in inclement weather.
Well, let's just say this. If the Rays were in postseason baseball, there would be no postseason baseball at their stadium.
Wow.
Not a chance because it just got really, really ripped up. And, you know, that affected everything inside the stadium. I'm sure there's seats and things like that that are severely damaged. I saw one, I can't remember if this was in Tampa or somewhere else, but one of those huge, big construction cranes toppled over from one of the tornadoes. We're seeing some images from Fox right now at Madeira Beach, Florida. And it looks like, you know, there's a lot of damage. But also on some of these images that I'm seeing, I was telling you this, Sue, before we started here. Fred, I mentioned this to you, too. Fox is, you know, there's drone video. There's other camera crews that are finally into some of these areas. And in some of the areas, you see a lot of the debris that's piled up, you know, near the road. That doesn't look like it's fresh damage from this hurricane. To me, that looks like what happened with Helene, and they bulldozed that all out. And I'm sure that they got more damage and more flooding, but some of these houses were already gutted and destroyed anyway.
Yeah. Did you see on CNN Anderson Cooper getting hit by debris?
You told me about it.
Yeah. Did they send him out there?
Here's the audio.
The winds have really picked up. The water's really moving. You can get a sense of just how fast the wind is moving there. You can see it in the light there. It is now just whipping off the Manatee River. It's coming in from kind of the north, I guess, northeast. And the water now is really starting to pour over. If you look at the ground, whoa. Okay. That wasn't good. we'll probably go inside shortly. But you can see the amount of water here on the ground. Let me just grab this here. So, yeah, like stuff is just this literally. This came from the river. Thankfully, it's just styrofoam. I'll try to put it down over here.
I think he's okay, though. Anderson was okay. But I can see, you know, you almost wonder. You see Cantori and some of these guys from the Weather Channel, how long it might be before someone's really taken out on live TV.
I hope that
doesn't happen, but it wouldn't shock me.
I saw a lot of them were, like, squatting down like they were riding a surfboard. And I saw one reporter wearing a helmet.
Well, we will confirm all this with Steve Jervey. My sense is that, and this is what's interesting, the flooding wasn't as severe as they anticipated. The real damage is coming from the winds, and much of that real damage, ironically, is coming from tornadoes not the hurricanes. So he'll know all the details on this. There's a lot of damage. And, you know, let me just briefly here, this is uncomfortable when people are suffering, and I still want to talk about North Carolina because I think there's people and there's bodies that we haven't even recovered from North Carolina, and that's going to be affected here as well. But there are severe implications here for our election, which is in under 4 weeks. You look at North Carolina and Florida, you'd be hard-pressed to tell me that you're going to have polling places set up in enough locations that hundreds of thousands of people are displaced now. I don't know how that's going to happen. It would be my anticipation, I hope I'm wrong about this, that you don't, you know, have a result in this election until December. Here's Karl Rove talking about this earlier.
It might if the people in the affected areas, Western North Carolina and now a big swatch of Florida, say, I don't think my governor or the federal government are doing enough for me. And in a way, the federal government's in a...
What about their physical ability to vote?
That's going to be a real problem because in five congressional districts in northern Georgia, and really those three in western North Carolina, those are heavily Republican districts, all eight of them. I think the weakest number in Georgia is 62% Republican in those districts, and it goes up from there. Those people may not be there on election day. They may be in, you know,
I've got
friends who are already in Atlanta, and they don't know when they're going to be able to go home.
So this is going to be, look, if something is on the line and it's a close election, which we all think it's going to be a close election, and Trump somehow has not declared the winner here, you're going to have all sorts of, you know, justified hysteria, I think. So I don't know how they're going to work this out. We can't even trust the federal government to go in there and run this disaster relief effort, you know, in an effective manner. I'll tell you who's doing a pretty good job. job here is Ron DeSantis down in Florida. And, you know, one of the things that he talked about, Fred, I haven't heard these because you do have some updates here. So let's hear this. He says, look, it could have been worse. And I think he's talking about how some of the water didn't rise to the level where they thought it was going to be.
Honestly, for the mobile home stuff, I thought there would be more roof. So some of these mobile homes, I mean, they've done a lot better in Florida over the years. We flew in over a number of the communities as well. There were definitely some roofs that were really bad, but then there were others that did really well. Another thing I think I can say just by doing our tour with like Siesta Key, I mean, our buildings that were built, you know, in the last 20, 30 years, I mean, they did very well.
So, you know, some good things as well when it came to the aftermath. I heard him this morning. I had Fred pull this audio because I was listening to Fox this morning when DeSantis was on. He's given several updates. And, you know, can get, you know, because now you're going to have people saying, well, look, and this is weird, right? You have back-to-back hurricanes hitting much of the same areas that in category 3, category 4 storms. So it's happened before.
Oh, I mean, I think most people remember 2004, right? Where we had seemed like you had them every other week in 2004. Then there's also time period, you know, we had from 2006 to 16, we had no hurricanes at all in Florida. There's also been times where we had a lot. The 1940s, we were getting hit a lot. You know, now more recently, we've had a spate of more. So that's just kind of the nature of it. But this really does, it has a lot of similarities to 2004 in terms of the season.
You know why? Because the government is controlling the weather, ladies and gentlemen. They created these hurricanes. Now, look, I understand that there have been declared efforts to try to impact the weather by the federal government for decades, all right? So that's not completely made up. But I don't think it's really along the lines of, you know, creating a little hurricane that's going to grow into a monster storm in a petri dish. So that's stupid for Marjorie. You know, even if there's some truth, because I went over this yesterday, even if there's a little bit of truth to this government controlling the weather or trying to do things, shut up about it right now, okay? Shut up until after the election, because it's not going to help you. It's only going to hurt you. So DeSantis was asked about this today.
Look, if I could control the weather, I would do, you know, 78 and sunny year round. Now we get that, you know, a lot in Florida, it, you know, coming up in the months, but there would be no reason to ever do. So look, and this is on both sides. You kind of have some people think government can do this, and then others think it's all because of fossil fuels. The reality is what we see, there's precedent for all this in history. Like, it is hurricane season. You are going to have tropical weather. We hope that, you know, a lot of the tropical weather are fish storms out in the Atlantic that never impact us. Reality is anything that gets in the Gulf of Mexico, it's got to hit something.
Yeah, so that's DeSantis from earlier today. And we'll have much more with Steve Jervey here reporting in just a couple of minutes. Let me offer a couple of things here. I'm gonna ask you two to help me with something here, Fred and Sue. I have a very short video for you to watch, okay?
Uh-huh.
And I don't think either of you have seen this, so I want you to, Fred, go over by Sue so you can press play on this. And what I'm asking you to do, I'm being very serious here. This is something I want you to describe what's happening in this video, okay? I just put this up on Twitter, so if you want to follow along, you might want to grab the iPad, Sue. I don't know if I have the arm strength to hold it in the air like that, especially with my left arm. So can you describe what you guys are going to see in this video at all? Just press play there, and if you have problems, I can come over there and help you out.
Okay, here it goes.
Here it goes. What's going on in that video? It's a very short clip. Can you tell?
Someone being fed like a Dorito?
Right. So there's a woman what position is the woman in?
Receiving the Dorito?
Yeah. She's on her knees,
on
right? Is she on the
edge?
Oh,
it looks
I
like,
couldn't tell that she was on her...
Well, she's either on her knees or she's sitting down. She's not in an upright position, right?
Right.
And someone is feeding her a chip, like a Dorito.
That's a Dorito. You can see the bag.
Okay. Is that a little weird to you?
Yes.
Okay.
What is this?
You know who that is? That is the governor. You know who's feeding her the chip? The governor of Michigan, Gretchen Whitmer. Now, Colin Rugg, who posts a lot of this stuff.
Okay, that's weird.
Okay, thank you. This is why I wanted to do it this way. Because you want to talk about the GOP and Tim Walz and J.D. Vance being weird. This, ladies and gentlemen, and this is going to be confirmed as soon as you go to Twitter or you Google this. You can go to my page at Mark Reardon KFTK. This is the weirdest shite that you will see all election season.
What?
There is nothing more weird.
What is the context?
Okay, I don't know that there is a good context, Sue, but here's what Colin Rugg reported on the X formerly Twitter. New Michigan Governor Gretchen Whitmer feeds a chip to a begging liberal podcaster on her knees in an effort to get more votes for Kamala Harris and Tim Walz. Whitmer joined Canadian feminist Liz Plank for an abortion podcast episode. The pair released the following video as a bizarre way to get more votes for Harris. There is audio to this, but it's only music, which is why I didn't pull the audio, because there's really nothing there. At one point during the podcast, Plank asked Whitmer if she ever thinks about getting a post-birth abortion on her two daughters. The pair also talked about masculinity and why men aren't supporting Democrats. But I got to tell you something. Like, if I don't even know if I can do this analogy. I'm trying to think of the best one. Can you imagine Mike Parson feeding a chip to some podcaster or any other governor?
This is so bizarre.
I mean, it's weird.
It's weird with a capital W. Fred, would you agree?
Oh, yeah.
So here's what I would say. And I got to always put the caveat here, okay? Because I'm often wrong about politics. I know it's hard to believe.
It is a shock.
Every once in a while. So in 2016, this was about the time that I told my friend Chris Smith, there's no way Trump's going to win this election. I'll shave my head. And then Trump wins the election. There's things happening right now that are trending extremely well for Donald J. Trump. There's new polling out of Michigan and Wisconsin, which makes this look like Trump might win both of those states. Now, again, we're still several weeks out. This is within the margin of error. But Harris is struggling in Michigan. I saw a great speech by Trump that was in Detroit. Fred, I don't know if you noticed some of that. He was, he was not teleprompter Trump. That's the difference. 4 weeks ago, I saw teleprompter Trump. Now I'm seeing him weave. He talked about this yesterday on the podcast. He's like, I don't ramble, I weave. And he does kind of weave. He talks about things and then kind of goes back to the references. There's also news out today, and some of this we're going to talk about with Carl Cannon from Real Clear Politics, who's one of the best political, you know, experts and junkies out there from Real Clear. He'll join us in the 5 o'clock hour. But there's interesting polling also that shows that Harris is losing ground with Latino men in particular in Arizona and Nevada. And those are both states that are trending in Trump's direction. North Carolina is very tight right now, but certainly would look like it's favored, you know, Trump to win. But again, now we got issues there. So we're going to get with Carl. We'll talk about some of this stuff a little bit later. We're going to get into some of the CBS material as well with the bias there. This is another one of those things where I can't even believe some of the stuff that's being exposed. And let's check this one out. All right. You guys ready for this? I don't know if you heard this because it came out. I think it was our friend David Strom. No, I don't think it was him at Hot Air. Oh, this is from the Free Press. But they retweeted or purpose it, if you will, on hotair.com. This is David Wiseman from the Free Press. Tell me this isn't weird, okay? In late August, now this is coming, you got to frame this around what happened with Tony DeCoppel at CBS. He does this interview with Ta-Nehisi Coates, who's a liberal whack job, writes a book about Israel, the Palestinians, doesn't mention Hamas or Iran, ignores a large part of the equation here, and they hold this conference call with their news folks on Monday morning on the anniversary of October 7th, and they just dress down Tony DeCoppel, saying he did something inappropriate. Jan Crawford comes in, defends him. A lot of people are defending him right now. But knowing that information, okay, here's the latest. In late August, Mark Mamat, Senior Director of Standards and Practices at CBS News, sent an email to all CBS News employees reminding them to, quote, be careful with some terms when we talk or write about the news. From Israel and Gaza, in particular. One of the words on his list was Jerusalem. Of Jerusalem, Mehmet wrote, do not refer to it as being in Israel.
What?
Thank you, Sue. He said, do not refer to it as being in Israel. He continued in a note sent to thousands of people in the network. Yes, the U.S. Embassy is there, and the Trump administration recognized it as being Israel's capital. But its status is disputed.
By whom?
You see how Tony DeCoppel thing? You see how this? Tell me that these nut jobs that are on the campus at Columbia University and some of these other campuses, they're running the show at CBS. He goes, the state of Jerusalem goes to the heart of the Israeli-Palestinian conflict, which, by the way, that's not untrue in and of itself. But he says Israel regards Jerusalem as the eternal and undivided capital, while the Palestinians claim East Jerusalem, occupied by Israel in the 67 Middle East War, is the capital of the future state. But that's what they're doing. They're telling them to not mention that Jerusalem is in Israel. I have no words for that. I really don't. But that's what you're going to get with CBS and some of these other mainstream outlets. We'll take a break. our friend, Sue's friend, Steve Jervey, down in Tampa, the very latest on Milton, his reaction, coming up.
I'm Jean Marie Laskus. I'm a journalist. I spent my career helping Americans understand the lives of other Americans. Coal miners, gun shop clerks, staffers in the White House mailroom. In my new podcast, Cement City, I tell the story of an entire town. A dying town that you have absolutely no reason to care about. But trust me, you will. Listen to and follow Cement City, an Odyssey original podcast in partnership with Cement City Productions. Available now for free on the Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
I heard this one today. Put it in the rotation. 3:32. We're down back to Florida and Tampa. Your friend Steve Jervey, who has become our friend here on the Mark Reardon Show, our official hurricane correspondent, unfortunately. How are you holding up down there, Steve?
Oh. In fact, the phone I'm talking to you on, hello?
Yep, sorry, that was operator error. I didn't have you punched in right away. Go ahead.
I'm doing great. The phone I'm talking to you on was charged by my generator, so that should tell you all you need to know.
So how did you spend your night last night? Because this thing ended up coming in a little bit quicker than maybe anticipated, right?
Just from a sleep standpoint, that was very kind of it.
Because, yeah.
I did get to bed a little early. Went to bed about 1:30 as the storm pulled away, but you know, it came in earlier and allowed me to, observe it and be part of it. And it was very impressive. It's probably the worst hurricane I've seen in my house since I've been here for 26 years. But that doesn't mean anything. It's like in the big picture, hurricanes like this have hit Florida for, you know, centuries and thousands of years. So I just happen to have one where my house is.
Right.
Did you have any damage, though, to the house? And I'm guessing this is from winds?
Yes. Winds, no water, thankfully. The winds were very strong here, probably gusting to 90 around the backside, especially on the northwest side of the eye as it moved across the state. Surprisingly, it's not surprising. I've seen storms do really, really strong winds. You think, oh, they're gone, and then the winds come around and they're stronger than they were on the front side.
Yikes.
So that's not that surprising. In terms of flooding, I went out on my front porch last night and I looked and it looked like there was a river going down my street. It was like from left to right. It looked like you were standing by a lovely stream, except that stream was coming right up to my front porch. We had so much rain and it just, you know, it flooded. I could see all the way across the neighbor's front step as well. And I was a little worried then because, you know, this is kind of an unprecedented for me. Is worst storm here since probably 1921, although we didn't have the flooding. It could have been so much worse.
Yeah, explain what happened there, because I was listening to some of the description earlier, the way that the hurricane took a little bit of a right turn, and then that kind of sucked the water out of the bay.
Yeah, because, just like a wheel counterclockwise, the winds go around the center of low pressure, which is the hurricane. So if you're south of the eye, then you get strong winds coming onshore and you get all that water that's pushed up. That's the worst side. If you're north of that eye, then you're getting winds going offshore toward the Gulf of Mexico, around from the north. So you have the exact opposite effect. You don't have the advancing worst winds on the south of it, the storm surge. You have, in fact, water going out like it did briefly in Tampa Bay. And I've seen that before. Tampa Bay is very shallow. It's like I've seen it before when the water just empties out because of those winds going offshore and people are out there walking and, you know, looking for seashells or something. I don't know. But it's very, it's a very shallow bay ultimately.
Okay. I didn't know, Steve, about the tornado thing, that was a combination. And some of the stuff we're seeing today on TV is really just
crazy.
Tornado damage. And then you see they just got the whole thing.
It's insane. And people don't know about that. But there's a lot of wind shear. That's winds that change direction with height causes that spinning, right? Coming from this lower level, this direction from the higher level, that's what causes the spinning that causes the tornado. We don't get those kind of tornadoes in Florida, wedge tornadoes, the ones you see in Oklahoma. You know, that you see the storm chasers, those crazy guys out in Kansas somewhere. We don't get those in Florida. Usually ours are kind of, they dance around, then they go back up into the clouds, the majority. But because the wind shear was so great, and this was a very intense storm, it on the outside, those rain bands, and I've seen it in storms, it's unbelievable the amount of shear that goes in these rain bands. They spin off like tentacles around the center of the storm, and they're just incredible amounts. And they saw that they had like 120 tornado warnings, mostly to our east, southeast Florida. And the pictures I saw, I was like, what is this, you know, like Texas? You know, incredible. So So that's why it was really dramatic for Florida, because we just don't get that kind of tornado.
Well, and that's, I think, what's been stunning for those of us watching from afar is some of the damage. I mean, we talked about Tropicana Field and what happened there. That's pretty dramatic when you see the Tampa Rays ballpark. And by the way, there's been a, they've not unexpected. Ethan just sent this to me. I think there's a hockey game. The Saturday game, South Carolina at Tampa Bay has been, or Carolina, not South Carolina. I'm sorry. That's the National Hockey League. But that's been postponed because of some of the damage down there. One of the questions I was thinking about last night, and I'm sure you've answered this, maybe even with us, but is there a simple way to explain, like, when the hurricane just gets started, like, I guess it's a tropical storm at first, what happens to just ignite it? Is there an easy way for someone like me to understand that, Steve?
It's heat. It's the earth, basically tropical storms, even thunderstorms that you get there in St. Louis. It's the earth releasing the massive amount of heat it develops from the sun. And in the northern hemisphere, low pressure is rising air, and, it's true everywhere. Low pressure is rising air, high pressure is sinking air. In the northern hemisphere, the force of the turning of the earth causes that, in low pressure rising air, the force of the turning of the earth causes it counterclockwise to move around the center of that low pressure, which is a hurricane. I was talking about that. It's the opposite with high pressure. In the southern hemisphere, it's just the opposite. But that's what it is. It's heat, rising air, and then favorable upper level conditions for it continue to draw energy off a warm surface water. And there's a thing called a latent heat of condensation. There's a heat that's released from the condensation process, and that's what fuels the hurricane.
Wow. There you go. Did you get that part?
I did. Yeah, I did.
Because that's the only thing I've heard that makes any sense. And high pressure keeps you clear, right?
Yeah, you know how a cold front comes through, and it's kind of hot and humid in St. Louis. And also, cold front, you get some thunderstorms, and then all of a sudden it's like, oh, the winds change out of the northwest, and high pressure from Canada builds in.
Yes.
And it's like, oh, clear sky, not a cloud in the sky. It's beautiful. You got a northwest, northeast wind, whatever, and it just changes the scene instantly. The earth is constantly trying to equalize. Air has weight and mass. So it's constantly pushing and pulling, pushing, and that's what causes wind, and that's what causes things like this. But remember, when you see things like this, this is what the earth does. It's letting off heat energy. It has to go let it off somehow, and in this case, in the tropics, that's how it does it, one of the ways.
I'm assuming, because you're on the phone with us here, you did not lose power, or
he
is
said
that
his console? Generator.
Oh, that's right. You said the generator. The host was not paying attention.
Can you hear in the background? Sounds like
I can't hear it, but that's so. I saw the number was like 3.8 million people going that didn't have electricity. Is there, I mean, that may be something that doesn't get the switches go back on right away. In other words, it's going to take a while. There's power lines down, right?
It's complicated, yeah, because it's just, you know, there's so many people and there's so many, you know, sources of loss of power that it's difficult for them to chase down and fix. But, you know, one of my great friends, it was nice enough to send me a text and go, I got power back. And I was like, thanks. Thanks for letting me know.
Do a lot.
I don't have it back.
Is it the majority of folks have generators because they anticipate something? I didn't think so.
No, majority of people don't have generators, but there are people that do, including myself, because I did that job for so many years.
Nice.
I know.
Yeah.
I've studied this for years. So, yeah, mine is natural gas. It just kicks in when my power goes out, and it runs like 15 circuits, including an air conditioner, which is huge. But I also had my TV last night, which was helpful. But, so now, it's fine. I mean, it's part of living here, and honestly, it doesn't happen. Now, you can live here for 50 years and not have something like this happen, or you can have it happen twice in a year. It's crazy like that.
That's weird. Yeah. All right. Well, Steve, thanks. Thank God you're safe and everything maybe was not quite as bad as we thought, especially if you're looking at the potential death toll. It seems relatively small. But we're still, you know, I still look up at the Fox screen here. I'm seeing new images come in every minute or so, and I don't think we know all of the extent. Look, I said this earlier too, Steve. I don't think we know the extent of North Carolina right now.
No, we don't. That storm was amazing because it was so wet and slow moving and big. This one for Tampa Bay, you could say they were spared. We got hit with winds, but it could have been so much worse had it come into, say, you know, Clearwater. It would have shoved that water into the bay, nowhere for the water to go, and then you would have had a massive, even much, much worse. Oh. So we were lucky in that regard.
Steve, how far south did the damage go that's bad?
Well, to be honest, I've been cleaning up my yard, and it's going to be like a week-long project. So I don't have any assessment of the damage other than to know that was a Category 5 for a long time. It had built up a huge storm surge, pile up the water, and it's got to come ashore. When it comes ashore, you get smacked pretty good. So you're going to continue to see stories out of there, especially with Helene passing and people were, you know, throwing up their hands like, oh my gosh, I can't believe this is happening. But
well, don't take this the wrong way, but for your sake and everyone else down there, I hope we don't talk to you for a while, Steve. Right?
I hope to not talk to you guys soon, too.
Yeah, exactly. All right. Hey, we appreciate it. Thank you so much.
All right. Take care.
Thanks, take care. Wow. I mean, he's rolling with it, and that's what you got to do. But maybe they got off a little easier than we anticipated. And I said, too, I think a lot of people heeded the warning, Sue, because of what happened a couple of weeks ago. We're coming back. Don't forget, we got Sue's News after 4. Tom Petty was from Florida. And, you know, you guys said something before we hit the air, you and Fred, and we never came back to it. Isn't it amazing that the day after something so horrific, it's just like perfectly calm and sunny and beautiful? I was only in the path of one hurricane. It was a minor hurricane that worked its way up the eastern seaboard way back. This was the early 2000s. And I took a group of listeners to New York City and Nova Scotia. I was at WTMJ Milwaukee at the time. And part of it was it was a really cool trip. It was a three-day cruise, just a short cruise from New York to Nova Scotia. And then we came back and we did a New York theater tour. We went and saw a couple of shows. Well, what happened was torrential rain at the end of a hurricane. And they even closed down some of the shows that night. It was that bad. I'm pretty sure we got to see, it was like Annie Get Your Gun with Bernadette Peters, if I remember correctly. But it was torrential rain and just awful weather. And we had to, as I remember it, the ship had to kind of negotiate a different way into the port because of the storm. And at that point, it was probably a tropical storm, Sue. But what I remember is the only time I was ever at the top of the World Trade Centers was that trip. And it was the day after that hurricane, and we all went up, you know, a bunch of us, my listeners, perfectly beautiful day on the top of the World Trade Center. And that was almost, like, it was about a year to the date before 9/11. Now that I think it was exactly a year before that. So in the next hour after Sue's News, we're going to visit with Beth Cirio. She's with a group called Do No Harm. She's actually a nurse, an RN, who developed a new national database, which is called Stop the Harm. And what she did is she sort of got all these hospitals and medical facilities that are doing the so-called gender-affirming care to kids, surgery, hormones, puberty blockers, like WashU here in St. Louis, although they've stopped doing that. So we'll get with her in the next hour. But I wanted to point this out because Riley Gaines posted this last night, and she's been a hero, of course, on so many of these issues, and she had to compete against a biological male in Leah Thomas. She said, last year, I recorded a podcast with Pennsylvania School Board whistleblower M.S. Myers 1735. It's just a Twitter address, about a male tennis coach who would strip down with the girls in their locker room. He threatened legal action if I didn't take it down. The headline today is exclusive. Transgender coach at Pennsylvania High School, who was previously accused of undressing in front of teen girls, resigns after starring in porn while smoking meth. I mean, I can't make that one up, I tried. A transgender sports coach has quietly resigned from a Gettysburg, Pennsylvania high school, leaving some members of the community scrambling for answers. Sasha Yates was found starring in pornography while smoking meth and has been reported to the statewide Child Protective Service program for undressing in front of teen girls in their locker room. Hey, here's an idea. How about address it when he actually did it, when Riley Gaines and other people were complaining about it? And don't wait until he smokes meth on camera film. That is unbelievable. So the story says, in the fall of 2022, shortly after Yates began identifying as female and using women's facilities. I mean, some of this is just a mental illness and a sickness. And that's one of the things that J.K. Rowling has really exposed. He stripped down to a bra and panties in the girls' locker room where the teen soccer team was changing. See, they think this, the trans activists, they think that's perfectly fine. It pisses me off to no end that this topic has not come up one time in a debate. Kamala Harris, Tim Walz, they've never been asked this question. It's true. Know what Trump and J.D. Vance would say. They've never been asked this question because they're being protected by the legacy media. Because, as we pointed out before, this is not some 50-50 issue. This is not a 60-40 issue. This is a 90-10 issue, if not a 95-5. It's only little snowflakes that work at newspapers and, you know, for CBS News in New York and the rest of the legacy media that has an issue with it. The rest of us are like, well, we got the issue with it. They think it's okay. So she starts undressing into a bra and panties. While in the locker room, Yates questioned the young girls on their menstrual cycles and what type of panties they like to wear.
Okay.
The girls later reported they were able to see that Yates was still intact, indicating, you know, what was visible. It's awful. Now, this goes back, again, this goes back more than a year. There was a parent who was actually a school board member who, you know, reviewed internal documents to all this. The district hired an attorney to do an investigation, and they determined that the allegations were unsubstantiated despite never interviewing the girls who had reported seeing Yates.
Of course, don't ask the girls.
Yeah.
Who are you asking?
I don't know, right? So now he's been arrested, and I'm pretty sure, you know, not going to be employed by the Gettysburg School. Now, along those lines, I thought this was excellent. You know, we've had Jennifer Say on before. She's the former head of Levi's. She's been very active with Riley Gaines into this effort to make sure that women, actually biological girls, can play and compete against other biological women. And Jennifer was a guest a few weeks ago. She's got this XXXY. Almost got it wrong. Athletic brand, Sue. Remember when Jennifer was on? They just did a commercial that went after Nike.
Dear Nike.
Dear Nike.
Dear Nike. Why won't you stand up for me?
Why won't you stand up for me? Why won't you?
Why do you claim to support women and girls?
Yet when we need you most,
you remain silent.
Today, males are claiming our identity.
Our sports.
Our spaces.
Men and boys are stealing opportunities, medals, trophies, and our future.
And it's not fair.
This is awesome, isn't it? I mean, really, really powerful. Wow, I don't know how much this will actually air anywhere, but they created it on YouTube right now.
Just. In fact, it's often dangerous. Yet you refuse to use your platform to stand up.
You say you're for social justice and progress.
So why do you allow men's rights to come before ours?
Good question.
See, with a big platform
comes an even bigger responsibility.
You have a chance to do the right thing.
Not just do the easy thing.
So we're asking you, Nike.
So we're asking you, Nike.
So we're asking you, Nike.
As the biggest voice in all of sports.
Will you stand up for me? Will you stand up for me?
Will you stand up for me?
Will you stand up for me?
Will you?
Will you?
No, they won't. And,
nope.
You know, in a fair media world, you would wake up this morning. Now, I get that the news cycle is pretty busy, but ESPN would have written a story about that. And no, they won't. You know, the New York Times should have written a story about that.
Yep.
They won't. They won't touch it. But it's some pretty good questions, I think, for Nike and good for Jennifer Say and XXXY Athletics for putting that out. And Riley Gaines really tightly, you know, tied to Jennifer and the whole effort. In the next hour, I mentioned Beth Cyria will be here from Do No Harm. We'll also have, there's a great event that's taking place this weekend. I've been many times. I know Fred's one of my Lutherans. I'm a Lutheran, so I'm non-practicing, but still. You know, I was brought up a Lutheran. The Lutheran Elementary School Association, which is known as LESA, L-E-S-A, they do Brew in the Loo in Francis Park. Francis Park is a beautiful park. It's a great, great event. There's music and food and fun. And Amy Colvin with LESA is going to join us in the next hour. We got Tim Fitch. Have you seen this story about the Troy police officers clashing with a couple with their kids in their car? And there are these people out there, I guess, that they claim that they're sovereign citizens, that they don't have to follow the rules and the police.
Oh, yeah.
So this got pretty heated, and they hit him with a taser, and now the dude's complaining. We'll have Chief Fitch, former St. Louis County Police Chief, kind of weigh in on that in the 5 o'clock hour. And then we'll visit with Carl Cannon. Carl's always one of my favorite political types. His dad, Lou, is a legend in Washington. He's the Washington Bureau Chief for Real Clear Politics. And as I mentioned at the beginning of the show, look, I think there's some really interesting polling that's coming out right now in Michigan and Wisconsin in particular that favors Trump. We'll get to that. That's coming up. All that and an audio cut of the day.
Get more at 971talk.com.
This is Jean Marie Laskus with the podcast Cement City. So there's this election coming up, a big one, and one guy's been indicted. People are talking voter fraud. Democracy itself is on the line. Sound familiar? Well, this isn't that election. This one is in Denora, Pennsylvania, a dying town in the middle of nowhere, where I bought a house and stayed for 3 years. Listen to and follow Cement City, an Odyssey original podcast in partnership with Cement City Productions, available now for free on the Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.